Ladies and gentlemen, much like spring, we are finally back together.
Finally.
Finally.
It ain't right without the two of us in the studio.
It's not. I mean, although this morning did feel more like early March than late April.
Yeah. Compared
to the 6-winter we had earlier this week and last weekend, yes. I will take early March.
Yes.
On Monday, Dr. Richard Fuller, who is our head of secondary education, mm-hmm. called a meeting and said, I'd like to welcome you on this Monday, the 96th of January.
Nice.
And that's pretty much how it felt.
The man that you just heard attempting to make a humor, and he did, is
Dr. Soren Fanning, your friendly neighborhood historian.
There he goes again. All right.
I'm going to keep doing this.
He didn't say it last week until I bugged him to.
Oh, really?
For you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Shows how much attention you've been paying.
Pretension?
Pretension.
Pretension?
Potential attention. Pretension.
Wow. Hey, yeah, you could tell it's getting late in the semester, can't you?
I've just gone to the George W. Bush School of Public Speaking.
The bazillions of people?
Bazillions.
The bazillions.
But do not misunderestimate me.
Misunderestimate, exactly. And I am going to try to get my name out without joking, but I may not succeed. My name is Dr. Anthony Moretti, who is accused of being your friendly neighborhood journalism professor, but I don't know. We'll see.
Now you are guilty.
I don't know if
charged.
Anyone. I've never heard you be accused of it.
Well, thanks. And that and that voice who just slapped me down is
John Rowland.
And John, you are.
I'm getting ready to graduate and get out of here is what he's getting ready to do.
I just thank work God. Here. That's the answer. I work here.
Yeah, but you are much more than that because you are the voice in our head.
The voice of reason.
That's it.
The technical magician.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I still have to find you guys a technical magician, but I'll work on it.
Nice. This is episode 26 of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. And as you know, we like to theme this podcast whenever we can.
Absolutely.
And today, the theme is, with a sort of drum roll, Soren.
Happy trails
Oof.
To you.
Oof.
Yes, it's the Happy Trails edition.
Ooh, he can talk, but ooh, that's...
Oh, I can't carry a note in a bucket, but it's just...
And the reason that we are calling this one Happy Trails is a couple of reasons. Number one, there are obviously a couple of U.S. political or legal figures who are in the news. Illegal figures. One for a decision he has made, one for decisions that the second man previously apparently made.
Indeed.
And then we're going to talk about missiles, all right, as a way
absolutely.
To wrap this up, so to speak. So let's begin.
We actually have semi-breaking news.
I know, with the news of the day, and again, we are recording this podcast on a Wednesday, and more specifically, it is April 11th, 4 days until tax day. Have you filled out your taxes already?
Already filled them out, submitted them, got my check back.
Excellent. Our check is not returned or come in the mail yet, but that's okay. That's fine. It will be. 4 days before tax day, and...
Although I will say, it is infuriating to have to write a check to my local community for 62 cents. That is annoying.
Really? That's what you owed the...
I owed Ohio Township.
62 cents?
Yep.
Don't you pay your taxes on time?
Well, I did, but apparently I miscalculated somewhere along the line. But it's like, it's almost... when you almost pay more in postage than you actually owe, it feels
So you didn't, like, take 62 pennies and walk down to the treasurer's office and...
No, because actually the folks in Ohio Township do a pretty good
agree.
Job.
I agree. They are...
I really didn't want to punish some poor receptionist.
With 62 cents, you know. I'm going to give you a piece of my mind and another piece, you know. All right. The news of the day, obviously, is that one of the most recognized and either respected or controversial or both figures in the Washington political establishment will soon no longer be a member of the Washington political establishment. And dear Soren, do tell us why.
Because Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, number three person in line of succession for the president, technically number two outside the president himself,
right,
has decided to, at the ripe old age of 48, call it a career.
No.
And is deciding not to run for re-election. Presumably, he will now go home and dust his lovingly preserved collection of the collected works of Ayn Rand.
Now, yes, he is a firm believer in her philosophy, which
the term is cultist.
Okay, that I'll go along with that, if you so insist. All right, now the answer that Paul Ryan gave is the standard one. I want to spend more time with my family, which means that he's going to take anywhere from 6 months to a year to recharge his batteries and then do something else.
And then come back as a lobbyist.
Does he come back as a lobbyist? Does he run for governor of Wisconsin? Does he make perhaps a Senate run? Or does he seek the top prize of his party in 2020?
Well, directly challenging Donald Trump?
Why not?
Well, because that would require a little bit of a backbone, and his is vestigial at best.
Who are they, what, how?
I don't think he's got the, and I'm going to try to be polite here.
He doesn't have the spine.
Right, the spine. That was the body part I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Certainly so. Not anything more tender or lower hanging.
Yee.
But no, I mean, it's. I got to say something. When they say, I want to spend more time with my family, it reminds me of the Soviet Union when someone got the flu, which was sort of code for, we just sent him on an all-expense-paid trip to Siberia and not
well,
the urban
you could definitely
part.
Get the flu there, all right? You could definitely do that.
They really have to come up with a better reason.
What will, and I know immediacy makes both prognostication or analysis either foolish or perhaps most accurate in terms of sort of hitting up with reality. What is Paul Ryan's Washington legacy?
Well, now that, on the one hand, bear in mind, the man has only been Speaker 4 years.
But it's he's been in Congress 20.
I know, but
or will be when his term ends.
To be honest, his most lasting legacy at this point is probably being Mitt Romney's running mate. As Speaker of the House, he will probably be best remembered for being Donald Trump's chief enabler.
Okay.
The man resembled Punxsutawney Phil with an approaching shadow. Whenever Trump did anything, his response was to dive back into whatever Warren served as his office and wait for 6 more weeks of winter.
Now, let me play devil's advocate. He was a loyal advocate or a loyal adjutant and a loyal advocate for the Republican Party.
No, he wasn't. Okay. And those, and the president and the Republican Party are two different things.
Oh, especially in this case.
He has been a very loyal enabler for the president. He has done, as a senior person within the Republican Party, immeasurable harm to both the Republican Party and, by the way, conservatism itself.
Granted, the last two speakers of the House are different in age, but John Boehner was... basically, and I'm not making fun of the man when I say he was basically a dead man walking when he was done because he was just absolutely exhausted from the job.
And I'll be honest, I don't agree with a lot of what John Boehner stood for, but I just felt he showed his humanity. And he was in a position I would not wish on many enemies because how would you like to have to herd cats with the Freedom Caucus?
And Paul Ryan, who is, you know, spot on when he said today, and today, of course, is, again, Wednesday, April 11th, the day that we're recording this podcast, in which he said, I did not essentially seek this position. I did take it on, and essentially now it is time to hand it off to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
he had to be dragged kicking and screaming into the speaker's chair.
Which leads me to think he was promised something.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Maybe he was, but I have no evidence to that.
So. Nor do I.
So I'll just go on what I do know. I think they played the whole, the future of the party is at stake card. He probably intended only to serve a single term. But when Trump was elected, he basically said, holy crap, we have unlimited... We essentially have total control over the federal government. This might be my one and only chance to get my pet projects through.
Okay. And he did with the large tax cut.
He got one.
The large tax cut.
Right. Which, bear in mind, might have been the smallest and yes. least important of the things he really yes. wanted to go after.
And remind people for listening and for whom politics might not be as passionate a pursuit as it is for you and as it is for me. What did Ryan want that would have superseded a massive tax cut?
Several things. One, privatizing Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the full repeal of Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Three, massive cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, essentially balancing the nation's books.
Which of those three is closest?
The last one.
I agree.
There have been cuts, not nearly what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important to point out, he might be the most competent Republican on Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to point out that with a sympathetic president and total control of the legislature, and you could argue the Supreme Court after the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch.
Agreed.
He has managed to accomplish at best 25% of what he wanted to accomplish.
And is that a reflection less on his leadership and more on the fact that, as you and I have stated on many other occasions, the Republican Party is sort of a mishmash of people who all are under the same Republican tent?
I think it's an equal split. As on the one hand, absolutely, the Republican Party is not a single image. It's a mosaic at this point, and it's barely holding together. Again, the Freedom Caucus is sort of exhibit A there. But I think the other problem is that Ryan's lofty goals simply not only were not shared by the bulk of the country, were not shared by even the majority of his own party.
Mm-hmm.
Government spending is, you know, great to run on until you're in charge of the government. And suddenly, as we found this week, we are starting the Trump $1 trillion deficit march.
Yes.
That for the next 4 years, we're going to be running over $1 trillion in the red year after year after year.
And remember, the Republican Party is the party of fiscal discipline, so we've been told.
Well, yeah, that's the line.
Speaking but... of other speaking of people who apparently lie.
Nice segue.
Woohoo! And by the way, again, this is upon further review with the podcast profs. He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. And the voice in our head is John Roland. Episode 26, by the way. Of Upon Further Review. We've been further reviewing a lot of things, apparently.
And there's a lot of stuff that needs... Remember when we were wondering if we would ever have anything to talk about? It's like drinking from a fire hose. Oh. Just stuff's coming every single day.
Okay, now...
But the bombshell that rocked yes. D.C.
If Paul Ryan's retirement, whatever term you want to use it, I think it's basically a temporary adieu to Washington.
He's getting off the Titanic in Belfast.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. Which is kind of ironic considering his name is Paul Ryan, okay?
Right. But no question. Ryan is seeing, he doesn't care about the Senate. The upcoming midterms, by all accounts, look to be just a shellacking.
Could be.
In yep. the House. And I don't think he wants to have his name anywhere near that.
So, Paul Ryan is, as you suggested, probably a quite smart political animal for doing what he's doing. Then there is the man for whom, if anybody else has a worse week in American politics, you do not want to meet him. Michael Cohen.
The personal attorney of the President of the United States.
Who this week was...
He got paid a visit by three separate teams of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
And the three teams did what?
Okay, so, you know, it's like that old joke. Knock, knock, who's there? FBI, open up.
Yeah, now.
You missed part of the joke. There was no knock.
Yeah, well, we had a good point.
John Roland, ladies and gentlemen, how long are you here until?
2-3 weeks, something like that. I don't know. I'm not keeping track.
And the crowd goes... mild. No. No. All kidding aside.
You do realize until he gets a replacement, if we had to run that thing ourselves, we'd be like two chimps trying to understand a word processor.
This is true.
You know, just random pushing of buttons, a lot of screaming, and maybe some feces slung.
Did this work?
Yeah.
Did this work? What's this red knob? No. So, Michael Cohen, as John did correctly amend what you said.
Yeah, got no advance notice.
Not get a knock on the door from the FBI. And they raided his New York office, his apartment, which is under
renovation
and his other hotel apartment room where he is currently living. And what were they looking for?
Well, this is where things get really interesting, because the propaganda put out on Trump TV, Fox News, as well as from the president himself, you know I'm right, has been that this is a gross violation of attorney-client privilege. And look, I'm not a legal expert, but I have done my homework on this. So we need to have a moment to describe. All right, what does attorney-client privilege cover?
Mm-hmm.
So let's do this hypothetical situation. I have hired you, Anthony, as my attorney.
Well, there's your first mistake. No, your first mistake was whatever you did to need me as your attorney, but that's okay.
Well, I'm clearly one of the more incompetent criminals, but you get the idea. I'm
not touching that one.
But I'm currently being charged with tax evasion. I say, you know, it's wrong. But over the course of our discussion, I let slip that I helped rob a 7-Eleven when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My admission of the robbery is not admissible under attorney-client privilege. But if your response to the tax evasion thing is, well, I got an easy problem, let's just go burn the tax documents at IRS headquarters, that is not covered because you are helping to plan the commitment of a crime.
And what does Robert Mueller and team perhaps think they have on Mr. Cohen?
Now, officially nothing. Remember, the Mueller team did not carry this out. However, they had enough evidence that they kicked it to the Southern District of New York, the district court, and they were the ones who legally obtained warrants from three different magistrates. And we need to stop for a moment and realize, what is required to get this?
A witch hunt. Just listen to the president. He always speaks the truth.
Bear in mind, it's not a witch hunt if you're actually getting witches to plead guilty.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind, we have had 19 indictments, five guilty pleas.
Mm-hmm.
But what you have to do is, one, you have to convince a judge that a crime is either in progress or has been committed. So you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a judge that there's evidence, enough evidence to suggest that. Number two, you have to convince the judge that this has to be done without advance warning, or there is a strong reason to believe evidence will be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And third, you have to have so much evidence that it warrants a raid on the president's personal attorney. This is not a step to be taken lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And that bar was cleared not once, but three times.
Mm-hmm.
Which means now the FBI has access to each and every one of the communications between the president of the United States and his personal attorney going back roughly 14 years.
Now,
because they seemed to seize his computers as well as his phone.
Now, they obviously cannot do, for lack of a better phrase, a fishing expedition. They have to
That's why they got the warrant.
Right. Right.
They had to state to a magistrate. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Right.
That there was a specific purpose, a specific goal. These are the things we are looking to get.
That's what my point was. They are not basically pulling an NSA and collecting all this information.
Let's see what we got here.
Saying, what do we have here? They are specifically looking for items as far back, perhaps, as 14 years, as far little as 14 minutes. I'm exaggerating, but again, this is not a...
rule that out.
Well, you never know. this is not a fishing expedition. This is, we are looking for specific items relating to a certain event or a series of events. Michael Cohen remains a free man. Chances are, I would assume, that if he is brought forth before a judge in any time soon for to be charged with any crime, my assumption is, much like Paul Manafort, he will be able to post bond, he will have his passport revoked, and he will essentially remain, if not under house arrest, at least have a very limited scope of travel in which he can pursue. Is Michael Cohen the most important get, for lack of a better phrase, right now in this entire ongoing investigation?
Oh, yes.
Because?
He's been privy to private, unfiltered communication with the president on, I must presume, is practically a 24/7 basis since the man became president. And bear in mind,
and for many years before that.
And the other thing is, here's the million-dollar question. First of all, if the FBI discovers anything salient to Mueller's investigation that is not protected by attorney-client privilege, they are not just free to, they are expected to forward that to special counsel Robert Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means, and this is the key point, does Cohen flip on his former client? Does he decide to turn state's evidence?
If you're Michael Cohen, independent of anything else, if the president does do what is increasingly rumored to be true in Washington, that he is going to fire Assistant Attorney General Ron Rosenstein. Rod. I knew Ron didn't sound right. Rod Rosenstein. If he does that, is that the bridge too far?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just today, we found out that Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has been moving forward a bill that would prevent Mueller from being fired. He's put it on the agenda for the committee to discuss and refer to the floor of the Senate. There have been numerous members of the president's own party coming out and basically saying, do not touch. Absolutely, no mas. Don't do this. The other thing, though, is, even if he does do that in a fit of pique, which is hardly unbelievable,
with this president,
there's two key things that he is clearly not thought through. One is, first of all, who are you going to get to fire Bob Mueller? Mm-hmm. You would have to get someone in Washington who is happy to take their career in law enforcement, douse it in gasoline, and happily set it ablaze. They will never work in D.C. ever again.
Does an assistant attorney general have to be confirmed by the Senate?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the other side of this. But the second point, or third technically, is even if he fires Jeff Sessions, Attorney General of the United States, Rod Rosenstein, Special Counsel Mueller, just because you remove those people doesn't mean the evidence vanishes.
Goes away.
There would almost certainly be another special counsel. And if you tried to take the ridiculous step of classifying the evidence or something like that, understand, one person with a thumb drive can just drop that off at the New York Times. So
Edward Snowden returned. No.
I'm just saying.
I know.
And by the way, none of it now is classified.
Yep.
And by the way, last night on MSNBC, it turns out that, what's his first name? Last name is Bente. He was, Dana Bente.
Mm-hmm.
One point he held, frankly, every job in the Justice Department during that chaotic first 3 months. He was interviewed by Mueller, and he turned over his handwritten notes, contemporaneous at the time, and apparently they all backed up James Comey's story.
Hmm.
And by the way, speaking of which, Comey's book drops next week.
Yes. And do you know he's going to be in Pittsburgh in October as part of the RMU Speaker Series?
I did not know that.
He is the first speaker for next year's series. First part of October.
It's going to be well subscribed to.
First Wednesday, first Thursday of October, whenever it is, first Wednesday of October.
This Sunday, he had a 5-hour interview with ABC that's going to be airing with George Stephanopoulos. That apparently is, how shall I put this, illuminating.
Always remember, when you are a president and you are facing a domestic crisis, you get involved in an international one. So when do we start dropping missiles on Syria?
And you'd think that would
be... And not just a one-time boom like we did...
Like last time.
What was the mother of all bombs, Moab? Was that what that was called? When do we start?
My brain is still buffering because under any logical circumstances, this should be the lead story everywhere.
Right. The president, by the way, took to Twitter on Wednesday morning, April the 11th, again, the day that we have recorded this podcast, and he said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing here, Russia, get out of the way in Syria because missiles of the beautiful and strong and new kind are on their way.
For God's sake. All right. Now, first of all, you have probably never heard me say this.
Oh?
And I may never say it again.
Uh-oh. make sure we get this good recording on this here, John.
Oh, please do, because I may never repeat it. But
it's okay. We've been recording for 25 minutes and about 20 seconds.
Excellent.
But I want to give... Oh, boy. I'm going to give the President Kroon...
Give him kudos.
Crunch bar croissant. Credit.
Credit.
There, I said it. Oh, my God, that hurt. But I will give him
credit.
Credit.
He may need all the credit he can get. He may be low on cash.
For, there's that. For finally calling out.
Russia.
Russia for their behavior.
Yes.
Finally.
Yes.
He did it like a guy passing a verbal stone, but he did it.
He did it.
So I will give him credit for meeting the bare minimum bar of acceptability for sitting president of the United
States.
See,
even I have given credit to this president a couple of times during his presidency. It's not that, well, okay, it's hard.
I was going to say, okay, it's don't hard. Finish that sentence.
It's hard, all right. It's hard. But see, you can still go home and still be loved by your family.
Yeah, but now I feel like I need a shower.
That's well, you were going to take a shower anyway, weren't you? Weren't you?
Well, of course.
Well, then there's no problem.
Now it's like walking into a non-clean movie theater. You know, it's like popcorn stuck to the floor and dried Coke. It's ucky.
Yes, it is.
But anyway, now we get back to the main problem.
Going to matter though?
No.
Why?
Nothing the U.S. president does that is considered acceptable is going to deter Bashar al-Assad.
Right.
Bashar al-Assad, excuse me.
Because Bashar al-Assad has...
a blank check from Vladimir Putin.
And the idiots in Iran.
Oh, there is that. Talk about strange bedfellows, by the way.
Who are not... All right, I admit, who are not the most... militarily powerful people in the world. I get that.
But regionally speaking, they are.
What'd you make of Israel, by the way, doing the first strike the other night? At least it appears to be Israel. No other country is taking... No other country is taking credit for it, for lack of a better phrase. And Israel's MO is to basically not acknowledge what it has done.
It's another day in the Middle East.
My concern, as much as I agree that Assad has to go, and I agree that chemical weapons are, you know, that's one step too far, especially against your own people. I mean, not that I'm saying, you know, if he had dropped it on the Israelis, it'd have been okay. That's not my point. But to have done this more than once. Assad has got to go. I accept that Assad has got to go. And the sooner, the better. Is an air war only?
Nope.
Thank you.
Nope.
And so at the end of the day...
No war has ever been won, ever, through the pure application of air power.
And keep in mind, this president, who I think was correct when he said, see, it's not that hard, sort of. When he said not too long
but
ago...
how do you fight the bile?
You don't. You just pretend it's not there.
Okay.
But when this president not too long ago said, we need to get the heck out of... we need to get the heck out of Syria sooner rather than later. And now a week later is turning around and changing his mind for, again, justified reasons. The man gassed his own people, meaning Assad. Is this Donald Trump's Iraq?
I think it comes down to this question. Is anyone willing to put the United States into another war for the sake of the Syrian people? That is an unpopular question to ask because the answer is probably going to be no.
Mm-hmm.
And for every humanitarian reason on earth, it's absolutely nauseating. I completely get that.
Mm-hmm.
Are we willing to risk war with Russia over this? Russia apparently is okay with Assad gassing his own people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can whatever judgment you want against Vladimir Putin for that, but that is the reality on the ground. The question is, how do we respond?
Do you think Russia wants a war with the United States over Syria?
I think they do not.
I agree.
But they know they are in a much stronger position.
In Syria versus the United States?
Yes.
Because they don't have 15 years of war behind them with Iraq and Afghanistan?
That would be one.
All right. What would be two?
They're physically just a lot closer.
Okay.
If you game it out, I don't see, you know, they are calculating on the fact that the U.S. still has to answer to public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Putin does not.
Mm-hmm.
Because for him, public opinion is whatever he says it is.
And the U.S. would need an ally in which to land, refuel, launch, etc., its fighter jets.
And in part, let's face it, it is a calculation that essentially what Putin is saying is this the hill you want to die on? Really, is this what you want to risk World War III over? It's cold-bloodedly Machiavellian, but that is the calculus.
Who blinks? Trump. Assad, Putin, or Trump?
Trump.
When?
Trump has never, ever not blinked. I know that's horrible grammar, but he always blinks in every circumstance all the time. Both Assad and Putin know this. So does Xi of China, as far as that goes.
So the message from Vladimir Putin to Bashar al-Assad is hang in there.
Wait it out. You'll get a nice rain of Tomahawk missiles, and that'll be it.
And that'll be it.
I mean, it's not pleasant. I get no joy in saying this. And I'm not just picking on Donald Trump because I find the guy on a personal level repugnant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, if you look at the historical record, he has never, ever, 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 ever stuck to his guns on anything.
Mm-hmm.
There is zero reason to suspect that he will suddenly develop a backbone. He is a loudmouth bully of a braggart who backs down the moment you challenge him.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, unfortunately. And what I mean by that is, if you're going to go, see, this is my feeling. If you're going to launch missiles into Syria, then I think the message has to be, we're going to keep doing this until Assad is gone. And if it means we're going to put troops on the ground, as onerous as that is, and as much as that makes you want to cringe, we're going to do it. In other words, I don't think you go in half-arsed. I think you go in or you don't go in. And America's appetite for war is not there. Therefore, we are not going to engage in a long scale.
Well, we got sidetracked in Afghanistan and stumbled mm-hmm. into an absolutely intractable position in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's no wonder the U.S. really has no appetite to get involved in Syria.
So in other words,
that's the problem Obama found.
Exactly. So in other words, it is happy trails to Paul Ryan for his political career, but he still has his future. And his freedom.
On the man's at the ripe old age of 48. I mean,
happy trails to Michael Cohen, who at least for now still has his freedom. But
enjoy that.
Might not have much of a career when it's all over. Unless it's, you know.
Take the plea deal,
yes. And probably agree to never practice law again. And then there is the happy trails to the United States, at least in terms of providing what I think you and I will call humanitarian-based, military-based leadership in another country in the Middle East, and the Syrian people are going to suffer greatly for it.
Well, and bear in mind, this is not just Syria. I mean, I know we're getting close to the end here. Trump has, since taking office, systematically attacked the very system of international relations pioneered by the United States and its mm-hmm. allies after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
So the 70-plus years of what we historians call the long peace
mm-hmm.
may be coming to an end. I'm going to make this prediction. This decision, the failure to act meaningfully in Syria,
mm-hmm.
will almost certainly make cuts to defense spending that much easier.
Hmm. Because if we're not going to use the stuff...
What on earth do you have this huge military for if in a situation that clearly calls for it? A tyrannical, knuckle-dragging dictator using internationally banned weapons of mass destruction against his own people. And if you're not going to use it, then why do we need to continue to spend nearly a trillion dollars a year
If, just a last question and a quick answer, because I know we're running short on time. If Trump would elect to, for lack of a better phrase, go to war, capital G, capital T, capital W, go to war in Syria.
Are we talking boots on the ground?
Boots on the ground, if necessary. Which U.S. allies would support him? Which U.S. allies would say, we'll send troops also?
Depends on how it's pitched.
Maybe the U.K.?
Given how he's bleak-talked. See, this is the problem when you feel like you can prove how tough you are by swaggering around and insulting your allies. When you need them, they don't come running.
They're running.
I don't see many.
You know it won't be Israel, because obviously that leads to a widening of that war in that region.
I will say this. Which European countries have Trumpist far-right people who just won elections?
Hungary,
maybe Poland.
Poland, but those are more in Russia's orbit than the U.S.'s orbit at this point.
Well, they're NATO members.
Okay, all right. But they could simply act or choose to say, we're going to sit this one out.
Well, they'll say they're sent troops. I mean, we might get like a motorcycle brigade, but I think the U.S. would find itself. That's the problem. I don't think we can make a compelling case if we wanted to, because of the damage we have done to international relations. Simply put, our strongest friends don't trust us.
Happy trails to U.S. leadership.
Well, for a while, yeah.
Yeah. He is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti.
He is.
And that other voice over there who stayed too quiet today.
I didn't have much to interject.
Okay. Is John Roland. That wraps up episode 26 of...
Upon Further Review with Podcast Profs.
Indeed. And we will talk to you next week when it will be... Holy cow, it'll be like a week left in the... No, next week's the last week of the semester, not counting finals, right?
Correct.
Holy
last week of instruction.
Cow. Holy cow, it's gone by.
Happy trails to time.
Happy trails to time. You're not kidding. We're not talking about the magazine either. That wraps it up. We'll talk to you next week.